This is the No BS Coaching Advice Podcast, episode number 200. I'm your host, Jeff Altman, the Big Game Hunter, and welcome. I like to spend some time talking with you about different elements of life, the universe, and everything. And today's show is one where I'm interviewing Susan Sadler about what it's like to recover from a gut punch. I'll also say that with this show, I'm going to take a hiatus for a while. I'm not sure when I'm going to come back, but I have the idea that I want to pause for a little bit, reorient, think of some different things to work on, emphasize certain projects, and not spread myself too thin. In other words, take some of my own coaching advice. So I do hope you enjoy this show, and I hope to hear from you again soon. In the meantime, you can always join me on LinkedIn. Subscribe to me there, or follow me there, I should say, at linkedin.com/IN/TheBigGameHunter. And I hope you do connect with me there. And with that, let's get going. Bonjour. There we go.
Bonjour. Hey, I was trying to see what is better for, is it better higher? That cuts me. Is that better?
The answer is, look, do you have me set up on speaker view on Zoom?
No, we're right next to each other.
Here's what I want you to do in the upper right. Okay. I'd like you to go to speaker view just by clicking on that. And
got
then
it.
I'm going to occupy the entire screen. The reason for that is the way that will work is number one is you wind up looking at me.
And does if I'm looking at you right now, does that look okay? Or does it look like I'm not looking, you know, right?
Just pause
right
for
place?
A second. Look okay. At me. Perfect. Perfect.
Is it?
Yeah,
oh, good.
And the reason, what makes it even better is with speaker view, it records as being whoever the speaker is the prominent person on camera, as opposed to the side-by-side thing, where invariably someone looks like they're looking like this.
This is what happened to me the other day. I had the side-by-side, and then I just, there was so much of it where I was like that.
And you're talking to the person, but
and know. then we had to redo it. And then one, you know, I have a lot of different devices, and one, the camera is too high, so then it always looks like I'm like this, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, good. That's good to know. I learned something. I knew I would.
One of the ideas is to keep. Now, are you working with a laptop?
Yes.
Is to elevate it ever so slightly, but for today, this is perfect. This should be the way you do your sessions.
Because, okay, good.
Because it tells people right away you're looking at them.
Great.
And
fantastic.
I want to print out what you sent to me. I know the topic. It's a great topic. Bear with me one second.
Sure.
Okay, there we go.
Oh, I love your cap.
You know, when I was a headhunter, I wore one that said headhunter. And when I transitioned into coaching, it became...
I love it.
Yeah. Do we have a short bio for you, or else I'm just going to have to introduce you.
It's in that message.
Okay. Okay. Where is it?
And I have it here too. If you want me to send it to you again.
I've got the message. I've got it. A credentialed coach. There we go. Thank you very much. Let me just copy and paste that out so I can get into a larger font because I'm an old guy.
Ditto. Not a guy, but old.
Well, I suspect I've got a few more years on you.
When I
say my next birthday, I turn 70. It normally surprises people. But it's in my beard.
What?
Yeah.
You're going to be 70?
Yep. This is what 70 looks like these days.
70 is the new 50-something. I thought you were like late 50s.
Yeah. So this is what 70 now looks like.
That's awesome. That's so inspiring.
There's hope for a lot of people.
Yeah.
That
is truly inspiring. That makes me feel great.
Coaches, executives on creativity, courage, and confidence. We're going to skip that because I have to make it concise because no one will listen.
I just tried to keep it brief and do whatever you want.
No, it's not a problem. It's up to me to edit the way I want to. And I've worked in advertising and PR for 20 years. Great. So I may flip that. Excuse me one second. I just want to get that line in. That works. That flows smoothly. The statements are that you're a credentialed coach, newly arrived in New York. I may tease you about that, about whether you still look up at the tall buildings, even though I know Singapore, I haven't been to Indonesia. Singapore obviously has it has quite a few. That you've worked in advertising and PR for 20 years and now has coached executives on creativity, courage, and confidence in order to have more professional impact. So then, welcome to... I'll do one of those things. And you'll see I'm playful during the show.
That's why I'm so attracted to your podcast, Jeff. Really, it's great.
Thank you. How many have you listened to approximately?
Probably about six.
That's great. What I was taught to do, I started No BS Job Search Advice Radio almost 10 years ago. And then I got approached by a guy who did, you know, he was running a podcast network. And his history was he put the National Basketball Association on radio initially, to give you an idea how far back he went. And he did like Home and Garden on radio. Like he was a radio guy. Mm-hmm. And he set me up with a coach. The first one just got me to loosen up, but there's one who's a station manager for the largest station in Chicago. And she got through to me. And her whole thing was, look, it's obvious you know the material, but what they want is personality to go along with that. So you hear me fool around and do some shtick.
I love it.
So that's my job. And on your left-hand side, you're holding notes, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'll just put that down.
That's okay. I just saw it out of the corner of my eye. Yeah. It's okay. And I've been recording.
So can you see him from here? Can you see my notes?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. What you're wearing looks well. The color against the backdrop works well. All good in terms of the visual. And
one question.
Sure.
So
with glasses or no glasses?
Well, no, the lighting here, I tried. Is that that I added
you're dark on
light.
Your face. You need light on your face.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm curious, can you sit forward ever so slightly?
Yes.
I just want to see something.
Yes,
that's ideal.
Okay.
So if you can move the chair up so you're comfortable. That's perfect. And
do I need to come up then?
Yeah, ever so slightly. But that's where we wind up with the thing with your eyes being off. So I'm just looking for how we can do this. Good. So
we try a different chair. Or is this okay?
It's okay.
But if I'm looking at you, does it look like I'm looking down?
Pause for a second. You're looking at me? Mm-hmm. You're looking down ever so slightly. Mm-hmm. So that's the ideal spot for the eyes. And we need it for the light, too. It's not that it's terrible.
Let me try to move this closer.
I'm fortunate that I have a window directly. Good.
Is that good. Any better?
Yes, no shadow.
Okay.
Good. So I just want to see the smile. You don't have to be saccharine smile.
Wait, let me just check my eyes again. So if I'm looking at you, what does this look like?
Like you're looking at me. Like you're looking at the camera.
So that looks okay.
Yes, that's what you want. That's the cool thing about this configuration is if you're looking at me, you're looking at the camera and the way
this
it records.
So much better. I can't believe that person didn't tell me about the side-by-side and he knows this stuff. But anyway, now I know it. So yep. It's great.
So let me just print that out and bear with me. You remember printing. It's that thing I hardly ever do anymore.
But I still do because I'm very tactile. I read books. I don't like Kindle. I don't like to read on an iPad. I have to have physical, you know, books, and I still like to print out notes. And
here we go. Got that. Let's just put that there, and it's approximately good. When it comes up on 10 minutes after the hour is when I'm going to dive in. And I drink coffee during these things. Feel free to do what makes you feel comfortable.
I've got water. I'll grab it and have it so I can have it a little closer.
I do that too, and it's okay to reach over if you need to get something. Excuse me. But I make this an easy gig for people. I don't know if you've heard any of my recent longer form interviews.
Yes, that's what I was listening to. That is the first thing I really got from your energy is that, and I was telling somebody, I was telling my sister, I said, I'm going to be on a podcast. She's like, that's great. And I said, well, I think this guy is very good at making people look good. So I'm not that nervous.
It is. I'm very good at that because I give you enough space to do your thing. And I just want to check one last thing. I apologize.
Oh, no, not at all.
Thank you.
Figured we had to have some, you know, whatever. Prep or something.
So our opening question, what should I ask you with to start off?
Here's one thing I was thinking about. Tell us about some of your clients in Singapore. You mentioned they're very smart and successful, and then something happens and it feels like they took a gut.
Got it. Perfect.
Okay.
So with that, if you are ready.
All right.
I'm going to dive right in, so don't be surprised, okay?
Okay. I just want to be in the right, I hope I'm in the right spot. Okay.
So my guest today is Susan Sadler. And Susan is a credentialed coach newly arrived in New York. She's a tourist, guys. After 25 years in Indonesia and Singapore, great country. She's worked in advertising and PR for 20 years and now coaches executives on creativity, courage, confidence in order to have a more professional impact. Susan, welcome.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. How the heck did you wind up in New York?
Well, after 25 years, my husband and I decided it was time to make a move back. And New York is this great place, good as a place as any, to land. I've never lived here. My husband went to NYU, so I am a tourist.
Welcome.
And, thank you.
And you were obviously coaching while abroad. And
yes.
You were working with senior people in different organizations, helping them achieve. And I'm sure they were doing well for the longest time. And then there comes that moment, that time where they have the professional failure that feels like a gut punch. What happens for them? Like, how does this get set up where this occurs? And how do you begin the process of working with someone to recover from one of those things?
Yeah, you know, these are situations where somebody may have, they're very smart. My clients are very smart and successful, and they got some tough feedback, and it was not expected, and it felt like a gut punch. Or someone who, in this particular case, I'm thinking of she was, her job was killing her. And so it wasn't a one-off gut punch, but it was like a series of small punches. And even another situation where someone's behavior was causing people to leave the organization.
I've had those happen many, many times. And you just wind up in a situation where, well, for me as a coach, working with someone to wake them up is an interesting challenge. So they get the feedback. What's the emotional response they have to that feedback?
It's interesting. A lot of defensiveness and denial initially, and then they realize this isn't the first time they have heard it, but for some reason it's reached a boiling point, and now it is landing with them, and it's still very hard to hear, and it feels harsh, and it does feel like a gut punch, but it's getting in their way. It is an absolute barrier for them to progress, for them to connect, to achieve, to collaborate, to gain trust, all of those things in a leadership role.
Excuse me. And what level did you tend to coach at?
VP, senior VP.
Good. Just making sure. So in working with this population of people, is their first reaction, like you said, it's defensiveness. Do they, and that's where you tend to walk in. You know, they've had the defensive response and they finally say, okay, I'll do it. Right?
Yeah, and so interesting, because some people found that one person who got this really tough gut punch feedback found me on his own. Somehow he'd heard about coaching, and I said, you know, would your company support your coaching? Because I can coach you on how to have the conversation for them to fund the program and support it. And he said, I don't know. And I said, yeah. He goes, but I'll ask. So of course the company said yes, because he was at a level, he was a managing director. He had been parachuted in from France into Singapore to start the office. So that was huge. And it turns out his boss in Paris had had a coach. So he's like, oh, you want coaching? Yes, great, that sounds good. So the boss was involved. And so that was, you know, a really good kickoff to the experience.
So now we start working on the kickoff.
Yeah.
And thus, how do you help them begin this process of recovering from that gut punch? Like, you know, I know that there's a huge, you know, tool belt that you carry depending upon who the coachee is. Where do you start with most of them?
I mean, really, it's a little bit of peeling back the onion. You know, what is really going on? What's the resistance here to either hearing you're a micromanager, or you're too abrasive, or you're just not inspiring or motivating? A lot of times it is a jolt in their confidence. Sometimes it feels like their feelings are hurt. You know, that there are a lot of hurt feelings wrapped up into this. Well, I heard somebody was talking behind my back, and you know, I'm not abrasive, and I'm not, well, okay, maybe I'm a little fast paced, but you know, that's what we need to do to get things going and to achieve our goals. And so little by little, you know, it's holding up a mirror, offering different perspectives, asking the questions of how is holding on to this very driver, directive, cut to the chase, cutting people off persona serving you?
It's funny. I interviewed someone day before yesterday for one of my shows, and he just had a book out, you know, Cracking the Leadership Code. And in the course of talking with Alan Hunkins is his name, I said, you know, one of my mistakes in leadership when I was younger was I was the driver. I was the one who was always pushing to get the results. And as Alan's book points out so well, you know, the launch point for getting the results that you want is connection. And I was overwhelming connection at that time. And it was a problem.
And that's the thing, you know, people in leadership roles tend to need to produce a lot of results and get a lot of things done. And so they want to cut to the chase because they need to get to the next thing. And that is very useful in certain situations. As a 24/7 leadership style, not so much.
And I'm wondering, you know, when I think of leaders in organizations, I think of the importance of courage as part of their growth and part of the way of inspiring people to be effective and successful. How does that play out with the people that you coach? And if you can use an example of it from your career, that would probably be helpful to getting people to understand.
Yeah. I feel such empathy with somebody who comes to coaching because it takes a lot of courage to want to develop your self-awareness, to improve something, to change something. And I had a person in Singapore, very senior sales guy, and his performance sort of started to do this. And that was the case of two people left his team, and they gave in the exit interview, the reason they were leaving was because of him. He was a driver, he was a teller, he was a micromanager. And of course, that never feels good to people. It's not empowering. And it was really hard for him to hear that feedback, to have that, sense of it, that's how he's presenting. And so that took a lot of guts. Now, his organization suggested he go for coaching. And so when they got in touch with me, I said, that's great. And does he want the coaching? Because, you know, I don't fix people. That's not what I do. And that's not what coaching is about.
Do you do if you're not going to fix them? Seriously, what do you do if you're not fixing them?
Well, they need to see things differently. And so they don't need me to like tell you what to do and how to be. I will throw things out there and give other ideas and present, you know, what's the risk if you don't change? What are the benefits of changing? What is holding you back? What is the barrier from letting this go and moving forward?
These people are incompetent. Now they need me to tell them what to do. If I didn't tell them, it's like talking to they're talking to 8-year-olds. And, you know, they forget these are 30, 40, and 50-year-old people.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's where I meet them, because these people are successful. They are smart. They are so intelligent. And yet there are some things that get in the way. I mean, so back to the courage piece, it takes a lot of guts to want to work on yourself. And I don't know if you've heard this saying that IQ gets you hired and EQ gets you fired.
Or lack of EQ.
Lack of EQ. Yeah, lack of EQ. Or IQ gets you fired, and I think it's EQ gets you promoted. Or lack of EQ can get you fired. So these people are hired because they are intelligent. Obviously, they can do the job. And there's so much more than just the intelligence piece.
Yeah, intelligence is the realm of the staff. It's the realm of the manager, the person who can deliver stuff at a management level, who can drive the bus. And I understand where the confusion shows up, because what got them to this level was that history doing all the other stuff.
Yes.
And they don't understand that there's a transition in leadership between the person who drives the bus and, you know, helps affect action and is that action-oriented person versus the one who, you know, I'm going to differentiate between motivate and inspire. Motivate, you have to do sometimes, which is that do it for me, please. You know, I need you to do this. Really, it's important to me. Versus inspire, which is that quality that you touch within someone where they want to do it. And how do you create that place within someone or reinvigorate that place within someone? So how do you inspire the people that you coach?
That's a good question, because I find the coaching process, and I have a coach as well, very inspiring and energizing. And sometimes I talk to other coaches and say, oh, I'm just exhausted after coaching. I never feel like that. I feel so energized, like I have a spring in my step. Afterwards. So the inspiration comes from, again, showing people there are other options. And very often, when somebody gets the gut punch, they feel very stuck. and it's a, like a almost like a downward spiral, because it's like, oh, I am working my behind off, and you know, I've started this thing and I'm doing this and that and the other, and this is what I get and this is how people see me. And so it is trying to, you know, get, lift them up, show them that they're, that this is a moment in time and there are ways to do things differently that can keep you moving forward. And that is a huge part of coaching, is to help people keep progressing, be accountable. That's a large role of the coach.
Of course.
As you know.
Yes, I do know. And accountability is an interesting piece of work for me, because I know how to do accountability in my sleep. And I, to try and do it in a way that doesn't seem punitive to folks, because that's the way they've been raised. You know, is being held accountable is almost like a form of punishment.
Yeah.
How do you tend to do it differently than that punishment model that so many seem familiar with?
Yeah, the last thing I want to do is to add on to somebody's already very heavy workload or mindset. So it's really about creating the, okay, let's try something on. And I learned this from another coach once, and he was talking about, you know, it's like being in the theater and you go backstage and you try on a costume and you come out and you have your performance. And then you say, that worked pretty well. And, or I didn't like that costume that much. That's great. Go backstage and you try something else on. So not about being an actor, but you get the metaphor of let's try it on. And in a low risk situation, you're not going to try something that's going to get you fired or, you know, something crazy, but maybe in the next meeting, you don't be the first one to weigh in and make a comment.
Oh no, not that. I can't do that. I'm smarter than everyone. Oh my God.
Or conversely, maybe you be the first one to weigh in and contribute, because when you do, you get the feedback. Wow, that's really great. We need your contributions, but you have, you know, again, took some kind of a gut punch. And so you just are not participating as much. And so it is creating baby steps, things like that, that lots of different things, but those are just a couple of examples.
Yeah, modulation is one of the interesting things people need to learn, because they've learned that that hammer works.
Yeah, it's like if somebody was too, very shy, an introvert, and they had a hard time weighing in meetings, you're not going to coach them on how to give a TED talk. You're going to, you know, take, you know, and the same thing, if somebody's very much that driver, you're not going to tell them, be silent. Don't say anything in the next meeting. No, you know, necessarily, because that probably wouldn't be too productive in the workplace. So you may say, don't be the first one, or don't be the first one to answer that email thread. Let somebody else jump in and try to solve it.
It's so funny about that. Take a deep breath, pause for a second, listen to the first person that responds, wait for someone else because you know they're waiting for you.
And it sounds, you know, and I don't mean to trivialize or minimize when I say baby steps, because a baby step for somebody could be huge, like those examples that we were just talking about. And then what happens, you know, they see it. Hey, that worked pretty well. Great. Do more of it.
And when you think of what a baby step is, and for me, it's vivid, of meeting my son, because we adopted him at just about age one, and he was learning to walk. And so he was doing the toddle thing going on. So it's lurch and grab onto something. And he was holding onto my fingers at different times. And he would fall down and he'd pick himself up. And then that's what the notion of baby steps is it's a practice with support that helps move forward so that they learn that they can do it on their own.
I love that metaphor. It really is perfect, because eventually, and this is exactly what happens with people at work, they get better, they get more confident. So it is this great upward spiral, just like a one-year-old walking. All of a sudden, they don't have to grab your fingers so much anymore. Still, they're going to fall down when they're 2, when they're 5, when they're 20, and you will still be there.
And mine is 19. No matter. There are times I'm there to help them. Because that's what we do, right?
That is what we do.
And as a coach, that's what we do for our coaching clients. Yeah. You know, they learn to rely upon us and to trust us and to trust that they don't have to figure it out on their own, because obviously they've got a blind spot of some sort.
They do. And this feeling of being stuck is really tough. I think all of us at some point in our life have felt that. And it's hard to talk to your family, maybe, or your friends, or people that have a vested interest in an agenda for you. And that's why they may stay in that stuck mode, because think about it, don't your friends give, aren't they really good at giving you advice? Here's what you should do. But that's not what coaching is, because our clients are resourceful, they are smart, they are creative, and we just need to facilitate and draw the best out of them and help them unpeel and unpack and get unstuck in a neutral way.
So when they get the gut punch, the first response should be, call a coach. No. I think the first response can be, get more information, rather than curl up in a ball in a lot of pain from, this makes no sense to me. What, are you kidding me? And acting defensively. Find out more. Try and be inquisitive, which I know is going to be hard, right?
It is. Yeah, it's that curiosity. If you can hold this tough gut punch a little bit lightly and go into that of like, hey, you know what, that feedback that I got felt like a gut punch and I'd like to learn more. Tell me more when you say I'm this, that, and the other thing. Can you tell me a little bit more? What are your thoughts about that? And I mean, it's like a coach approach to facilitative approach to finding out more.
And that's what a person needs to do. And, I joked about hiring a coach. Coaching obviously makes it easier because you have someone to bounce ideas off of.
Right.
Who is working for you, usually not for the institution. The institution's right. Hired an individual to help facilitate the change. And from there, you can start experimenting with different alternatives and see which one works, just like my son did with holding onto my fingers as he was walking along.
Right. And sometimes they're going to grab your leg and then grab your fingers and then maybe try to, have you toe them around your ankle.
He did a lot of different things. I just remember that. I'm sorry.
Sorry. I was just going to say, and that's what is so rewarding and so exciting about coaching when you're in that process of, okay, let's try some things. Because most of these clients, like I said, they are intelligent and they get some more awareness and they go, okay, I can see now that micromanaging is not that productive and I get it. And okay, that's wonderful. You have that insight. Now, what are you going to do about it? And that is the fantastic thing about coaching, as you know. It's about moving forward. Okay, how are we going to get that into action? So you learned this about yourself and you know that something different could be more useful. So how do we get into action? And that's where the let's go backstage and try on something. And I just love hearing when somebody says, okay, I took a breath. I let three people speak first before I went into a meeting. I was like, how did that feel? It was so hard. It was so hard. But I was really patient. It's fantastic.
And they said some of the dumbest things. Let's get to the truth of it. Let's get to the truth of it. They said some dumb things. Nothing near as smart as I would have said.
Now they get a little bit lighter. And that is, I just love seeing that. It's so incredible. Doing things like they didn't think about or... they just didn't necessarily have the idea or didn't think about trying it on. And again, this is where it's not a whole scale personality transplant or anything like that. It's like, hey, let's try one thing. Let's try, have a town hall and you start with a lighter opening than the doom and gloom like you have for the last 10 town halls.
You mean they're not walking in cracking jokes right away? They go right for the, we're doomed, the end is near. Okay.
Now, sometimes.
I want to go to a slightly different subject than the gut punch. Because the gut punch, you know, folks know how painful that is. And sometimes as leaders now in our global society, we're dealing with multicultural issues or cross-cultural issues. And you mentioned that example of the French expat in Singapore who was getting tough feedback that I'm sure had some dimension of cultural difference as part of this. Am I wrong?
There are always cultural components in at work, in communication style, in perceptions, and you know, it's not, I remember when I landed in Jakarta, and I, as much as I knew about Indonesia was that Bali was there and that Jakarta was the capital, and that was about it. And, you know, you learned pretty quickly that people are not going to bend to you or your style or your culture. And fortunately, I'm fascinated by cultural diversity. And so I, you know, after a few bumps, like wearing sleeveless to work, that wasn't good. You know, you figure it out pretty quickly. And if you have some genuine curiosity and interest, then it becomes, I think, one of the most rewarding and exciting parts of living overseas. So most people don't take an overseas assignment if they don't have some curiosity, but it doesn't work out for everybody.
And I'm also going to add it, as you'll discover in the U.S., there are cultural issues. You know, race is the obvious one that we're all been made aware of or been reminded of. But I'm an ex-New Yorker who moved to the southern United States. And, you know, they refer to people who move from the north as being Yankees. And you're always a Yankee. And the great insult that you learn in the South is when someone looks at you and says, well, bless your heart.
Oh, I heard that one. Yeah, real passive aggressive insult.
It's not passive aggressive. It is well known. It is a direct insult. There's
a direct insult. Okay, so nothing passive about it.
None whatsoever.
Good to know. Good to know.
So, and thus dealing with those cultural components as a leader, trying to step into these environments and not create offense, as you've discovered for yourself, wearing sleeveless. Like, how does one begin the process of navigating? Let's start off with responding to a mistake, let alone navigating through a culture you're not familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, in Singapore, as an example, I mean, there are four official languages. There are, you know, because of the makeup of the population. And then you have, you know, Westerners, Europeans. And so I loved it because it was so fascinating on a daily basis. Everybody is going to make some cultural gaffe, probably. At some point, but you can mitigate it by obviously trying to learn, see what the resources the organization has, ask people, get to know people. I didn't make a lot of them because I was a quick study and I was curious and I was interested and I didn't want to offend people. And so 25 years later, I am still friends with the people in Jakarta that I used to work at an ad agency there.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So it sounds like from a cross-cultural perspective, the first thing is to recognize you're going to make mistakes and, you know, fix them quickly.
Yes.
Respond to them quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some things, you know, we don't know what we don't know. Even so, say you've even studied and you know this or that, and there were some things where sometimes people are very direct in Asia, and they will say to their friend, like, you're in a meeting, and they say, oh, Susie, don't you think Mia looks fat? You know, and I was like, and they just, you know, oh, well, just the way it is, you know, it's just kind of funny and that's it. And I just didn't say anything and okay. So, you know, it's a lot of it's sort of on the job. You just, you learn and yeah, just try to do your best.
And I'm curious, just using that one example, is it appropriate to comment about a man that way?
I never heard that. It's a good question. I never heard that. And other, you know, and other funny things like, you know how Americans, we have a lot of working lunches where, you know, you're maybe around, you know, conference room, everybody bring your lunch in and we'll have that. Yes. In Asia, they hated that because one, the eating time is sort of sacred and it's separate. And my boss in Jakarta did this once. We had a working lunch, everybody bring your lunch in, and everyone sat there except for he and I eating, and everybody did not touch their food until the meeting was over, and then they left and ate it separately. So we said, okay, no more working lunches. You know, you just, and he had been overseas for a long time. He had been in several different countries, but you just, you learn these things and you go, okay, note to self, no more working lunches.
Interesting. What haven't I asked you about so far that I should, that I've missed on that we should cover today?
If you want, we could talk a little bit about the person who didn't get a single gut punch, but a series of gut punches.
Oh, I would love that. Okay. I would love that.
Okay.
What form did those multiple gut punches take?
This was a person from Scandinavia. She'd been in Singapore for 10 years and also very successful, but she had two small children. She had a huge job that involved a ton of travel. So she was really approaching burnout. She was this close to complete burnout. And she wanted a lot more joy in her life, more fun. And she also was thinking about going back to her home country. Her kids had never lived there. You know, it was 10 years. She felt like maybe she wanted to go back. She also wanted to change industries. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot. So we worked in tandem. So first was job search. Okay, how are you going to get back to your, what industry are you interested in now? And how will you get back to your country? And then, so that was one part, one lane. And then the other was, how can you have a little, while we're working on that, how can you quickly have a little bit more fun until this, you know, until that happens, until you relocate? And so, you know, you talk about kind of the baby steps again. So she started to play piano again. She had always played piano. Coincidentally, I played piano. I was able to refer her to my piano teacher because she comes to your house, so you don't even have to go anywhere. She got her husband to watch her kids on Saturday morning so she could take a yoga class. And she started just texting her friends back home because she always felt like, I have to, you know, like have an hour to set up something on Zoom or Skype with a friend. And, you know, so it becomes a whole thing. And I, you know, we talked about, what about WhatsApp? Do you have a WhatsApp chat group, you know, with your friends? Because my old friends from school are all in Los Angeles. So I always did that. I said, hey, you know, hey, how's everybody doing? I just saw a dog with a trench coat on in Singapore because that happened, you know. So that was really useful because she got a lot lighter and happier and could bring that energy to her job search. And she did end up changing industries, and they flew her to Scandinavia for the interview, and she got it and moved, got her new industry, got her new job, and got back to her home country.
And lived happily ever after.
Well, funny enough, I was in Stockholm last year on a family trip, and I met her for coffee.
Oh, sweet. Very sweet.
That was great.
You've mentioned something there that, you know, I don't think we should ignore, and that's the notion of sometimes the coaching isn't going to be the right solution. Sometimes the person's in the situation where they're now branded and not in a good way. And thus, it's the right time to make the decision to leave. How does someone make that decision to leave at that time? What isn't happening that allows them to realize that maybe it's time to go?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because some of the examples I've mentioned, those clients have left their organizations. Two changed industries, one changed companies, but it wasn't immediate. It was anywhere from a year, 2 years, 3 years later. So it wasn't so much as being branded as it was, you know, the person that I was mentioning that was really defensive, he ended up winning like the big salesperson of the year award for his whole organization. I mean, he really turned things around. His boss noticed, the CEO noticed, all of that. But a couple of years later, he wanted to do something different. He was a very spiritual person, and so he wanted to do something that was a little bit more aligned with that. The French guy that I mentioned, he changed industries, completely changed industries, and went back to his home country. But that was probably 3 years later. So it wasn't because they weren't successful. It was because
Something
woke up. And I have another example where I knew a guy that was big in corporate finance, doing really well, but he hated it. He fell into it. He never liked it, really. He loved theater. And so, you know, he wasn't going to be an actor or anything like that. But what he did was he ended up getting a job as the finance director at a theater company.
Interesting.
So that, yeah, so you know, that at least gave him, he was in the vibe of theater and could do what he knew.
That's sweet. And it's interesting. It takes a couple of years for them to come to these realizations sometimes that maybe it's time to change the environment that they're in. Excuse me, because something has become alive in them again that needs expression.
Exactly. It's living a life that expresses your values. If you have a strong value of family and you're on the road 70% of the time, that causes a lot of tension and stress. And so maybe you relook at things and say, you know, I don't want to do that, even though the money is great and I have the title and, but you know, the price is too high.
Understood.
And that's so funny sometimes when I see companies like throw more money at the person. It's like, you're so not getting it. It's not the money, it's the time at home.
Yeah. You know, there's, firms have a default option for how to respond to a resignation. We'll pay you more. We'll give you more. That's the default option.
Yeah, it really seems like it. And it's sometimes it's just such a disconnect. And so if the person wasn't sure, then that's probably the thing that pushes them over the edge, that says, yeah, this is just not, it's not a right or wrong. It's not good or bad. It's just, it's not connection. There is a mismatch there.
Great. Susan, this has been fabulous. How can people find out more about you and the work that you do?
They can find out more about me at www.sadlercom.com. My company name is Sadler Communications, because when I started out, I was consulting in the advertising and PR space where I had come from. So, and then I moved into coaching. So Sadler Communications, LLC.
And sadlercom.com. And I'll have that link. Yeah, I'll have that link in the show notes. My pleasure. And folks, I'll be back soon with more. This is Jeff Altman, the Big Game Hunter. Hope you enjoyed this. If you're interested in my coaching, you reach out to me through my website, thebiggamehunter.us. There's a button there that says schedule, where you can schedule time for a free discovery call or schedule time for coaching. I'd love to help you. And by the way, this is brand new. My app for Amazon and for smart TVs is just coming out now. No BS coaching advice. Download the app. You can watch me there. And I do hope you enjoy it. Have a terrific day and be great. Take care.